What I have to offer is very small. I mean, really, really, very, very small. Smaller than thought. Smaller than emotion. Smaller than bodies. Smaller than atoms. Smaller than quarks. Very, very small. Infinitesimal. Which, of course, is the same thing as infinite. Infinitesimal. So small that it has been said and can be said that it cannot be found. So small is it. Very small. But from it proceeds everything whatsoever. Quarks, atoms, protons, neutrons, electrons, bodies, planets, suns, thoughts, emotions, good habits, bad habits, hatred, aggression, violence, love, compassion, mercy. From it proceeds everything whatsoever. And its presence, the radiance of its presence, is everywhere, undeniable, unmistakable, everywhere, so that it seems big, because there's nowhere whatsoever that its presence cannot be felt and found. Its knowing is eternal, undeniable. But its actuality is very, very small. The first thing that proceeds from this, the very first thing, is I. Just I. Not an I that is unique to you or me or anyone in particular. Although it is the same I for all of us, for every human, for every creature, for every rock, for every sun, for every atom. It is this I that is first that proceeds from it, and from that everything else. And everything that proceeds from it resolves back into it, finally. Everything. Every universe, every planet, every sun, every body, every thought, every emotion, all hatred, all aggression, all good habits, all bad habits, all love, all compassion, all mercy, all quietness, all peace, all fear, all freedom, all bondage. All of it, finally, recedes back into this infinitesimal nothing, this small, small speck of nothing that is you. That is yourself. You. We look for it everywhere. Our whole lives are spent looking for this. We know it's here because its presence is everywhere. The radiance of being is everywhere, undeniable, unmistakable. It seems so big, so pervasive, that we call it God. We call it freedom. We call it love and hope, joy and bliss. And we look for it everywhere, trying to get a hold of it, trying to make it our own, trying to be finished with the unsatisfactoriness of our lives by getting a hold of this hugeness that we imagine is not us. But the thing that we're looking for is its radiance. That's our mistake. So we look for it in its radiance. We look for it in its manifest projection, in ideas of love, in ideas of freedom, and ideas of hope and joy and bliss, of enlightenment, of spiritual truth. The actuality that we're looking for, though, is infinitesimal. It is tiny beyond tininess. It is yourself. The fact that the first thing, the first item that proceeds from it is I, gives us a clue, if only we know, where to look. This is the gift of Ramana Maharshi. This possibility that what we're looking for is not to be found in thought, is not to be found in emotion, is not to be found in spiritual ideas, it's not to be found in states that come and go, it's not to be found anywhere whatsoever, but at the core and the source of I. Just I. And I is actually rather easy to be found. Its other name is me. Me. Another name for it is ego. In fact, ego is just Latin for I. Now, for the most part, if we have been in the spiritual life for any time at all, one of the things that we happen upon, one of the ideas that grab us and seems to make a great deal of sense, is that ego is the source of all the trouble and the thing that above all things else must be done away with. It is certainly the last place we would think to look for the truth. Certainly the last place we'd think to look for freedom. The last place we'd think to look for self or God. And this is the great gift of Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi, perhaps because he had no spiritual background when the truth came and took him. He was, after all, only a 16-year-old boy. He had no long history of spiritual searching and spiritual understanding and spiritual practice. He had only the great good luck to be struck out of the blue by the fear of impending death and the movement of grace that caused him to find not help, not release from this terror, not instruction, not medical intervention or psychological intervention, but to find the one who dies ego, me, I. So he offers this experience of his to us to do with what we will. And in my experience, what we do with mostly is make a big old deal out of it. Worship Ramana. Think of him as some mystical presence, some bestower of truth, some dispeller of darkness, some font from which we can drink and be filled. But what he had to offer us is a lot simpler than all of that. What he had to offer us had nothing to do with what he could do to us or what he could bestow upon us. What he had to offer to us was the product of his experience, which came to him as a gift of grace. And the advice that all that's required in this life, all that's required finally to be finished with the idea and the affliction that we are bound, that life sucks, that there's nothing to be done about it. All that he had to offer us was the possibility that to find yourself, and the incredible, surprising direction in which to look, which is toward yourself, toward me, toward ego. To find ego, and we know it's here, no matter what the gurus and the sadgurus and the spiritually enlightened tell us, we know there is within us this knot of wanting and not getting, of aggression, of trying to hold, trying to get rid of. So what Ramana had to suggest to us, that we find this knot that is the problem, this ego, and hold it with our attention and find out directly, once and for all, what it is. What's at the core of it? What is its nature, really? Not our stories about it, not spiritual ideas about it, but the actual direct experience of the nature of this separate one, this lost one, this angry one, this hateful one, to see it for what it is. And his promise to us is that what is to be found at the core of I, of the experience of being me, what is to be found at the core of it is this infinitesimal, eternal source of all, which is yourself, not your true self, not your higher self, not your God self, but yourself, whose presence is everywhere, whose reality is undeniable and unmistakable. And into which falls all things whatsoever. The good, the bad, the indifferent. And whose nature is peace beyond understanding. Love without condition. freedom that has nothing to do with absence of bondage. Now this is really easy. It just takes the determination to know the truth about yourself and to look in the only place where the truth about yourself can be found, which is in the heart of yourself. That's all it takes. No one, not me, not Ramana, not Jesus Christ, not anyone else, can tell you how to look for yourself. You know. But what can be suggested is that that really is all there is to it. And all the rest of it is postponement. All the stories about it, all the practices about it, all the expectations of it, all the understandings and explanations of it are just postponement. You are here now. You have never not been here now. And to find yourself is as easy as you are small. In the end, what's required is that you be willing only to find yourself. And whatever happens in this life, whatever becomes of all your good habits, all your bad habits, all your desires, all your absence of desire, all your hatred, all your love, is not your business. The only thing that is your business is to find yourself. All that you think you are proceeds from this. And you have nothing to say about it. You must know that by now. So that's what I have to offer. And my suggestion, like the actuality of what I would like to point you to, is very small. It's just you. Just as you are. And whether you change or not is not your business. Whether this one that you believe yourself to be changes or doesn't change, that's not your business. It's the entanglement in that drama that's the cause of all the confusion. Just find yourself right where you would expect yourself to be found. At the core of I. Okay. Any questions? Any arguments? Huh? Really, to see this illuminates from the inside all of the spiritual teachings that have enchanted us and entranced us for as long as we've known about spiritual teachings. All of the spiritual teachings at their heart say that the problem is misidentification. Well, what's the solution to misidentification? The solution to misidentification is not to get rid of the object with which we misidentify ourselves, but to find the actuality of our identity. To find out who we are, really. Yes.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah, okay. Okay, you're saying that, well, two things really. First of all, you're saying that the ego is I, and that there is a separate you and true you. So you're saying that there's the identity, the ego, the I, but underneath that there's the true you. That, am I correct?
I'm saying what now? The identity with the I is what?
The true you. You're saying that ego is not the true you. That underneath ego, I, me.
I'm saying much less than that. Sorry? What I'm saying is that yourself is to be found at the core, at the very center of ego.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay, thank you. But the fact that I'm here and I've never not been here, I'm not lost, so why do I need to find myself when I am here? Is it not just the case?
That's a really good question. I don't know why that's the case.
I haven't finished it yet.
Huh?
I haven't finished the question
yet. Oh,
I'm
sorry.
It's okay. So is it not just a case of accepting yourself here now and letting go of the thought, which is where ego is born from?
Have you tried that?
I've done that, yeah.
And have you had any success?
Oh, yeah.
Does it come and go?
No, it stays.
Well, then, wonderful.
Thank you.
I don't have a problem with that.
Nor do I.
It's my experience, however, that ego isn't born from thought. It's the other way around. That thought arises from ego, from I.
The ego is just a word. And I believe that ego is just a word that has helped us stay in the pain-pleasure cycle for many, many, many years. And if you just get rid of that word, which is just a thought in your mind anyway, it's just another label for saying who you really are, then you have no pain. And you don't need that pain. So then you can have the pleasure. Then you can really find out the true you, which is peace, love, pleasure, whatever.
That doesn't include hatred and anger and aggression?
That is born from fear.
Hmm. And it doesn't include fear either.
Sorry?
The true you doesn't include fear either.
No, because when you really find out who you are, you can never hurt yourself, you can never hurt another human being. It's just not possible.
Oh, I agree with that.
And you don't need to because you have no fear.
I'm sorry?
You don't need to because you have no fear. You have no fear of your power, you have no fear of I, you have no fear of you. So therefore, you don't need to project onto anyone else your fear.
I don't disagree with any of that. And I'm very happy that you have seen through the misidentification. I have no problem with any of that. Okay.
Yeah, fine.
Okay.
I didn't expect you to have a problem. I was just passing a comment.
Of course, the only thing that I am aware of is that to advise people to let go of thought, to forget about ego, to do all of those things, I haven't seen that have much success in the people I've met with. I haven't seen anybody really, and I among them. Let me be the first to confess to my inadequacy. I have never had the slightest bit of success in letting go or holding on to anything. These phenomena seem to arise and fall on their own.
I have no problem with that, if that's what you believe.
Okay. Anybody else? Nor do I have any interest in getting rid of any of that. I have no interest in getting rid of anything. Seems to me that what comes and goes is not my business. Okay. I'm not even interested in getting rid of ego. Yes.
One thing that I have noticed is there are times when, you know, there are these thoughts or ideas that don't really seem to be attached to anything. But then when one of them catches hold or I kind of grab onto it, then suffering occurs and I struggle. There is struggling that goes on. It's uncomfortable. It, you know, I can feel it inside. It's and that comes and goes also, the struggle, the attachment, the holding on to those things. So, of course, the first thing that I want to do is try and figure out how to not hang on. And there seems to be this sort of endless mind working, trying to stop or to get rid of the attachments or to let go so that the suffering doesn't. I just kind of watch it to see if there is discomfort or suffering, and sometimes there is.
So what you're really trying to get rid of is the discomfort and the suffering.
Yes.
And from someone or somewhere, or perhaps from your own logic, you've decided that the suffering is caused by holding on to thought.
I guess.
Or trying to get rid of thought.
Yeah, it seems like sometimes that's the case, but I really don't know exactly.
What if you didn't try to get rid of suffering or discomfort?
Then it doesn't seem so bad, I guess.
You know, Gangaji.
I don't know.
Gangaji says that suffering is resistance. And that's also my experience. There's what we can do as individual ego minds. Mm-hmm. Our whole repertoire is this: get rid of. That's it. And we can't even do that. But that's all we can imagine ourselves doing, is get and get rid of. The problem I have with teachings and instructions that encourage us to stop trying to get and stop trying to get rid of is that, so far as I can, I have no idea how to do that.
I don't either, evidently.
Right. What I do know from my own experience and from the experience of people that I have been meeting with is that if instead of trying to figure out how to stop trying to get and stop trying to get rid of, if instead of doing that, I find the one who is trying to get and trying to get rid of, and investigate its nature, everything else is taken care of. And that's the reason that I speak of this, is because this is the most practical possibility I've ever come across. And my experience is that is the only, nothing else works. Isn't that the truth? Nothing else works. Nothing works. Nothing we try to do works. In the material realm, we have tried to get rid of our lacks and our the things we want to get rid of. We've tried to fill up the hole and get rid of the bad things by the accumulation of material wealth or position in the community or power or relationships or God knows what else. None of that worked. And that worked so poorly that we found ourselves in the spiritual venue where we bring to bear exactly the same tactics and strategies that we used in the material venue by trying to get something to fill us up and get rid of what we imagine standing in our way. We try to get states of bliss and peace and emptiness, pure consciousness, and we try to get rid of the things that we know stand in the way of getting these things that we think are going to give us what we want. Just like in the world. Same old, same old. We try to get rid of our aggression, of our small-mindedness, of our lustfulness, of our sinfulness, because we know those are the things that stand in the way of getting these really good things. And that doesn't work either. Nothing we tried works. This is the amazing thing about this offering of Ramana Maharshi, is that in my experience and in the experience of many of the people I have been with, it works. There's no need to figure it out. All that's required is that you find yourself. And if your whole intention is focused on the importance of finding the reality of who you are, the actuality of your identity, then everything that arises is your ally. Because everything that arises, like this suffering, this discomfort, is for you. The desire to get, the desire to get rid of, proceeds from and concerns only you. So that everything that comes then is your ally because it points directly back to you, which is at the center of it all, which is this nothing at the center of it all. So then, the whole game of knowing that suffering is wrong, discomfort is wrong, and it's caused by this craziness that I have of trying to get rid of something or trying to get something or trying to do something or whatever. The whole justification for it vanishes. Then that too can be welcomed because it points to me. It points to the one who is suffering. It points to the one who is grasping. It points to the one who is needing. It points to the one who is trying to get rid of whatever. So that's what I advise. I never advise anybody to stop grasping. I have no interest in getting rid of suffering.
I can see that's totally different.
Right. This is really good because it's really difficult to get how different this is. It's really hard to see how radically different this suggestion is. That's why so much nonsense has been pumped into the image of Ramana Maharshi. But what he had to offer is so radically different, such a radical departure. That's why the other teachers of his time told their devotees to stay away from him. I said, he'll ruin your practice. Sure enough. So that's great, great that you see that. It's not the same. It's not more of the same. It's the direct sword into the heart of the matter. Doesn't require that you know how to do anything.
I can see that. There's not much to it.
That's right, there's nothing to it.
seems kind of silly after that.
Huh?
And then the rest seems kind of silly after that.
The rest
that.
Is kind of silly. Always has been kind of silly. It's just revealed to be kind of silly.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Caught my fancy with this core issue. For some time, I've been confused about, I guess, what I would experience as horns of a dilemma. On one side, what I should be doing, and on the other side, what I want to be doing. Almost debilitated, I felt, on the edge. In some cases, a despondency. The confusion was how to incapacitated because of this dilemmatic problem to find the core of who is me and let the others dissolve or go away
or whatever
could be away.
So far as I know, it's the only, you know, I've been told that at the most advanced levels of all of the established spiritual teachings is the same insight. I've been told that by Tibetan Buddhists. And I've been told when I asked, well, why go through all that? I've been told because of compassion.
Well, the search is on here.
Yeah, because yeah, people can't get this. But it seems really obvious. I'm really happy to hear this. It's very obvious.
It felt like you were talking to me.
I was. Who else would I be talking to? Yes, find yourself. Find yourself, and then you know the truth. You see, I don't want to tell you what the truth is. Although I do. You know, the truth is that that is your nature. Your nature is love without condition. But when I say that, that doesn't help. Because then what I try to do when I hear that is be love without condition. As if I knew what love without condition was. But I know love without condition can't be this other stuff that I find within myself. So my experience is that it's much better to suggest to you that you find out for yourself. Don't take anybody's word for anything. Find out for yourself who you are.
Do I have an identity in who I am, or am I nothing in that identity?
Find out for yourself. I mean, you can speak of identity so you know the experience of identity. Find what's at the core of that.
Yes. That's some of my confusion on this, on the dilemma thing. Is where am I?
You're at the center of everything. That's where you are. You are absolute withinness. That's where you are. Now, I'll tell you, and what I said a moment ago is relevant here. Nobody can tell you that and where to find yourself. If we are very, very lucky, I can awaken in you the desire really to find the truth of your nature. And I promise you that. Once this search is undertaken, it teaches itself. It does.
We lose our teachers then.
Ah, what a break. Teachers have very little usefulness. You know, really, very little usefulness. We can, in my view, we can really try to encourage you to find the truth for yourself and to point you in the right direction, which is yourself, and perhaps to provide some advice and encouragement as the effort to implement this instruction. I guarantee you, once you really embark on this, everything that you have denied, everything that you have tried to get rid of, everything that you have tried not to have a part of you will come to get you. Every distraction possible will arise. This is what's meant by the story of the awakening of the Buddha about the appearance of the armies of Mara and the daughters of Mara. It's all you, every bit of it. But everything that you can imagine will arise and vie for your attention. I'm not there, here. Not there, here. So the limited usefulness of a teacher is to remind you how simple this is when it seems really complicated.
I was just remembering the story of if you're walking along the road and you see the Buddha, you kill him.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Yes.
When you find yourself, do you go, oh, aha, I see it now? Or is it kind of like, is it a process and it kind of sneaks up on you and you go, oh, wow, I know myself now?
When you get a glimpse of the truth, you will laugh. You will laugh at the joke. It's a huge joke. Because you see, you already know. You've always known. And the joke is that you can deny that convincingly. Nothing changes. That which changes continues to change. That which comes and goes continues to come and go. That which has never moved, that which is real, remains real. And you already know. That's what's discovered. But you find out for yourself. Don't try to figure out what I'm saying. See, that's the problem. We start saying this stuff, right, and right away everybody, well, what does he mean by that? What? Oh, wow, that sounds deep. Just you.
So should I not ask my next question of,
by all means, ask your next question.
Does it mean partly knowing or knowing yourself, does that mean 100% accepting yourself wherever you're at all the time? Like if I'm angry, I'm angry, and that's just...
That's already the case.
Well, I don't always accept.
There is within you the idea that some things are good and some things are bad. That too is already here. That is, exists, the good things, the bad things, and the idea that some things are good and some things are bad appears and disappears in awareness, in your light, in your radiance. None of this is, except insofar it appears in you. You already are fine with all of it, including this ridiculous notion that appears in you that some of it really is bad and some of it really is good. That too. If that has to go, right, then it's all a lie. If anything has to go in order for you to be as you are, because that's all we're talking about. If anything has to go in order for that to be, then it's all a lie. The whole spiritual mumbo-jumbo is a lie. You already are awake consciousness. You have never not been. And all of these things appear in you, in your light, in your radiance. They live and move and have their being in you. And the problem is, when we think that, this one that wants to get rid of this stuff is me. And it's that very one that I invite you to investigate. Whatever it is that seems like you, investigate. Not by trying to understand it or trying to explain it, but by the direct experience of its energetic nature. By moving the arrow of your attention into its heart. Do you hear this?
I hear it. I think I'm not so good at that, but...
Well, right, you're not so good at it because everything in your life, everything in the lives of all human beings, in the history of all human beings, screams out, this is not the right way. Everything that we have done for the whole history of humanity is exactly the opposite of this. This is why it is so different. All of our conditioning, all of our teaching, all of our acculturation, everything whatsoever says, no, out there, that, not this. The courage that's required is the courage to say, yes, I'm not very good at this, but I'm going to find out for myself what's real, who I am, really. And that courage is already present. Okay?
I found myself when I was about 7 years old, and it was scary. And now that, I call that actually the essence of the self, my true self. And it comes and goes. And I'm wondering, how can I hold on to that when I feel that, when I'm in that? It's hard to explain. And what do I do with it?
If it comes and goes, it's not you. It's a mistake.
Hmm.
You are the only reality that does not come and go. Now, there are some extremely beautiful and profound states of consciousness that feel a lot like you. But since they are states, they come and go. What you're looking for, and you see this, and all I'm doing is restating it, what you're looking for is what does not come and go. What it is in which these states appear and disappear. The states are not a problem. Not the good states, not the bad states. There is no problem. But what you're looking for, and it is absolutely understandable, that you would make this mistake. It's what the most advanced spiritual practitioners, the mistake that is made by the most advanced. It is the idea that there is a state that is what I desire, the true object of my desiring. I have tasted it, I have glimpsed it, And what has to happen is that this state has to be made to stay. And that keeps us going, going, going. Not that. No, it's not this. It's not that. Ah, wait a minute. Yeah, but then it slips away. Come back, come back. I tell you that that's not what you're looking for. There are great gifts of grace. But what you're looking for is yourself. And you've never changed. You have never moved. There has never been a single instant when you have not been present just as you always are. No matter how the body changes, no matter how states come and go, you remain the same and you know it. And that's where you go. And one of the ways that we make this mistake is because since it is the case that I, self, is ever present, is the ground, the substratum of all states, waking states, sleeping states, dream states, bliss states, horror states, fear states. Since self is ever present, it is ordinary. Ordinary. And therefore can't be what I'm looking for. That's the joke. You see. Oh, that? That's always been here. Ah. But when your attention rests on this ordinariness that is you, ah, this ordinariness is revealed to be not what you thought ordinariness was. So that's my advice. Is you quit chasing states. If they come to you, thank God for them. They're great gifts of grace. And thank God when they leave. And find yourself. Okay? Well, you're very welcome. Over here.
So back to suffering. Suffering is resistance. Suffering is postponement.
Well, postponement is resistance of a sort.
Yeah. Because, there's this suffering, there's the suffering that's brought on by the entanglement and the thought and the drama and the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can say to myself, you know, I'm always sort of mindful of, okay, don't turn this into therapy. Don't, because that's the gain of getting better, you know.
Yes, that's right.
When I say, who is it that suffers? And then it's like, okay, sometimes with that entanglement and all that drama drops away and there's the joke of all that. And then there's sort of like it's almost like the hangover of suffering where it's, you know, I'm talking about suffering that's, you know, it's gone to like my nerve endings.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. I've exhausted my body mm-hmm. from my suffering.
Yes, there's that's...
Can I just wait for that to go?
What else can you do?
Yeah.
What else have you done about it? Get back into suffering, right?
Yeah, get back into suffering about the suffering that's now affecting my body
right.
And how can
yeah.
I get out of suffering now because I'm walking around with this
electric
shell.
Yes, much better to just wait for it to go. You see,
mm-hmm.
the whole business of this hangover from suffering, right? The,
mm-hmm.
the nerve ends in my body and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all a story. It is a story about an energetic experience that is present.
Mm.
What's possible for you is to stop telling the story and instead welcome the energetic experience that's underneath it and drives the story that this is the remnants and the residue of suffering.
Yeah.
Okay? But you have to meet it, welcome it, defenselessly. Just do nothing about it.
Right. which, you know, giving up the, like, human drama,
yes,
you
that's
know,
right.
three-act, four-act story has yeah. become, like, easy to do. But it's that, it's this.
Yes, that's right. It's well, that. this is part of the story.
Yes, it's you part of the, yeah.
You know, you must see, and I can hear it almost on your lips, you must see that we are in love with our suffering.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that is the hardest thing. It is why so much turmoil arises in a genuine self-inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
It's because at some moment it dawns on us, and we may not even consciously acknowledge it, but it dawns on us, oh my God, I'm going to have to give all this up. This is all going to go away. It's not going to be me anymore. And that's scary. Because
mm-hmm.
that's what we've had, is this endless story of suffering. Of me and my story and what I've done and what I haven't done and what I still need to do and what I'm afraid of and what I'm not afraid of and how this is going to turn out. You know, that's it. That's what we have made our lives into. So when the inquiry leads to the beginning of the vanishing of interest in that whole story of suffering, whether suffering continues, whether suffering doesn't continue, then there's this, oh my God, what now? What do I do now? And that energy, that's a story about an energetic experience that you can meet, that you can discover what it is actually. Instead of trying to get rid of it. Is that helpful?
That's astounding, yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
So, this awareness of self, it's there, and it's really there in satsang, and I know this, I've read this, I don't really even have a question, but maybe a confirmation of why it feels to be richer in satsang or more self-aware in satsang. And then the idea of being drawn more to satsang. And then sometimes the idea arises that, oh, if I could just do more satsang.
Wait, what idea though?
The idea that, oh, if I could just do more satsang or mm-hmm. only be in satsang, I would be this richly aware all the time.
You should remain in satsang always. That's the whole essence of self-investigation, is to remain in satsang always. And the only mistake, the only twist, is the idea that satsang is only in these meetings. Satsang is self-inquiry, is the willingness to discover the truth, the reality, in every moment. That's what satsang is. These formal satsangs are a great help. They are a great support. But they are a support that you remain in satsang, always. Now, when I say always, I don't mean that if you find yourself tripping around in the stories and the suffering and so forth, that means you're bad and you're gone to hell. Whenever it occurs to you, when grace moves in you and you say, oh, here I am again, return to satsang. Put your attention inward. Find yourself. See what's real. Whenever it occurs to you, that's what's asked of you. And these meetings and formal satsang are a support for that. And that's the only mistake. Is, oh, I find it, when I'm in formal satsang, that's it. That's not true. Formal satsang is a support, great support. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, you again.
Just to explore that place a little deeper, there is nothing there.
Says who?
It's experience. Just right now, it's easy to see all these things arising, and they seem very stupid right now, but it also there is an emptiness. Sort of a funny.
Yeah, but that's why, you know, the word emptiness is used in some circles. But you see, yeah, I kind of get why they say that, but it's not really that.
Mm-hmm.
And nothingness is used, but it's not really that either. It's you.
Hmm?
It's you.
Ah. I'm quite sure what to do with that.
Yeah.
Nothing, perhaps.
Nothing,
just,
right.
Yeah.
All the doing is already being done.
Yeah.
It's
just feels so funny for one who's just a do, and then, yeah. Nothing to do, really.
That's right. It's all being done.
Yeah, it's just.
That is an authentic discovery. Mm. It's not, and we hear this business about not doing and so forth, and that's ridiculous.
Right.
Because then we try to stop doing, which we have never been doing anyway.
Yeah, it's not the same as stopping.
Right.
It's been a long time trying to stop.
It's all on where you put your attention.
Mm-hmm.
You put your attention on yourself, which is this, well, not quite nothing, but kind of. You leave your attention there, and all is well.
Yeah.
Everything's taken care of. Everything's taken care of anyway. But now you know it.
Checking.
Okay. Christine?
Okay, so now I'm a little confused, which is probably a good thing.
It is. I always like it when you tell me you're confused.
Yeah. I've been, you know, I guess if I want to tell a story about it, the Mara is coming up, right? It's been 2 years now. It's just, I just keep having this stuff. So I'm not supposed to be doing stopping?
That's right. You're not supposed to be doing stopping. Did you get my email today?
Yeah, but I had to read it really fast before I came here, so I have to sit with it.
Well, this whole satsang has kind of been along the same lines.
Yeah.
If you stop trying to stop things,
mm-hmm.
all will be well. All is taken care of. I know there are thoughts that are justifiable, that arise about how a lot of this stuff that's coming up mm-hmm. is wrong. And it's, in fact, the very thing that has caused all the problem. And these thoughts are justifiable and understandable. They just are not true.
Well, I mean, I can say, well, the stuff arises and, okay, so it arises. But it's what I do with it. It's, the conditioning is...
Right. And what I'm saying is even the conditioning, don't do anything about it. Whoever asked you to do anything about it, you haven't started it. You're not going to be able to stop it. You rest your attention in the source of attention. That's what you do. And let the devil take the hindmost. I tell you, and you already know, I tell you that if you rest your attention in the source of attention, all the doing you can do has to do with the moving of your attention. That's all the doing there is. The activity, the behavior, the conditioning, the habits, the good habits, the bad habits, you're not doing any of that. That's all happening entirely on its own. All the doing you do is putting the energy of your attention into it, which just keeps it all going. So I tell you, rest your attention in its source, and then wait and see. And when you are, when you find yourself moving your attention back into all of this stuff, and you will, just stop. That's what you stop. You don't stop the behaviors. You don't stop the conditionings. You don't stop the thoughts. You stop putting your attention on them.
Okay.
Because the putting your attention on them is a way of moving away from this energetic experience that underlies them and drives them. And as I said to you, the secret is to welcome this energetic experience and see it for what it is. Okay?
It seems like it is new information to me to think about this in this way. So I haven't been trying to make this inquiry. And I feel like I just have to take your word that there's actually something stable to be attended to there, that... my experience to this point in my life is bringing that attention. I haven't found a stable place.
But what I suggest is that it's not that you're looking for a stable place. Mm-hmm. It's not that you're looking for that. You are looking for yourself. Now, when you add the condition, what I say to one person isn't necessarily appropriate for everybody. And when you add the condition that what you're looking for is stable and doesn't change, then you think you know already what it is you're looking for. You have to start this like a child that knows nothing except that you don't know who you are. The only thing that is, and this is what you can take my word for, if you are willing to put aside everything else until you know the truth of your own nature. Now, I tell you the truth of your own nature is unchanging, is love without condition, is freedom beyond understanding. But I could be lying, and the Buddha could be lying, and Ramana Maharshi could be lying, and God itself could be lying. Because God knows that being told these things for all of your life has done no good at all. Believing them has done no good at all. So what I really tell you is that what you need to do is find the actual truth of your nature without any conditions. To find it actual. Because it may be that you're not all of that. It may be that you're just a passing fancy, born to live and strive and hope and fear and die in the end. But you want to know the truth, don't you? And you know already that you can't know the truth from understanding what other people tell you about yourself. Is that true? So what I tell you is find out for yourself. And the place to look, obviously, is at the heart of me. You're looking for yourself. You're looking for what feels like self. And if you will put everything else aside until you know the actuality of your own nature, that's all that's required of you. You will find your way. That much you can take my word for. What I want to awaken in you and in everybody I meet with is the determination to find the truth. Not to find that the truth is such and such, but to find the truth once and for all, for better or worse. Okay? Is that helpful?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Okay, one more. Julian? It's a pleasure to see you. It's a pleasure to see all you folks from down the south, southern reaches.
John, given the idea that we are in some way influential in the life that we lead and in our destiny and so on.
We're influential in the life that we lead?
Yeah. That
okay.
Our actions are affected by, as you put it, giving your attention to something. Okay, you give your attention to something. If you don't give your attention, the sun may not rise. The fire may go out. Now that idea, which is very contrary to my limited understanding of predestination and karma and so on, which in this culture is very foreign, that resentment of accepting that the world is going to go on without you, without your attention, in whatever small way you think you may be able to influence it, that I would define as being the ego. Now, how...
I think that's an excellent pointer.
Okay, now...
Because really, it's the same as the resentment and anger and horror that you should die. Because
yes.
The world's going to go on without you.
Exactly, exactly. Now, given that we could define that and agree between us that that is, for this purpose, the word ego, how can one examine that? Because, again, it's my old problem. How do you lift yourself by your own bootstraps? How does the recognition of that as being ego...
Well, first of all, Julian,
right.
You forget about your ideas about lifting yourself up by your bootstraps and so forth, and you divest yourself of even what you claim to be your limited understanding of karma and predestination and so forth. Right? The fact that you can speak so eloquently of this resentment, which is the heart of the the hatred of the idea of dying. Really, that's at the heart of it. The whole show is going to go on without me. That's why the awakening is sometimes equated with dying, because it's the same thing, that the same nut. But the fact that you can be so eloquent in your description of this resentment indicates that there is an extremely powerful, energetic experience that you're calling by the name of this resentment.
And
it's that that's to be investigated.
How?
By putting your attention in the heart of it. It's just like the flame, the candle flame. Not by examining it and thinking about it and comparing it with spiritual understandings and so forth, but by thrusting your finger into it. In the same way, thrust your attention into this energetic experience that's at the core of the difficulty of contemplating the possibility that you will forever be finished with any idea that you have anything to do about this life and how it plays out. Right in the core of that, put your attention.
And would you agree that that is ego in the sense that I'm using it here?
I would agree that that's very, it's close enough.
Close enough.
Yes. In fact, I have been trying to say that business about this resentment in order to direct people for many years now. I'm really glad that you finally taught me how to do that.
That helps the ego, of course.
Well, the bigger and more solid ego is, the easier it is to find. Okay?
Thank you, John.
You're very welcome. Okay. Wow. What a wonderful, wonderful meeting. What a wonderful group of people. I am so grateful to you all for this satsang, because satsang is the support of all. Satsang is your nature. I'm not even going to try to say anything more except thank you. I am at your feet. May all being know itself. That's my only prayer. May all being know itself. Om Shanti. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.